Then Jesus entered the temple and began to drive out the people selling animals for sacrifices. He said to them, "The scriptures declare, 'My temple will be a house of prayer,' but you have turned it into a den of thieves." After that, he taught daily in the temple, but the leading priests, the teachers of the religious law, and the other leaders of the people began planning how to kill him. But they could think of nothing because all the people hung on every word he said. Soon after Jesus' entrance to Jerusalem and his tears for the people there, the things that we talked about on Sunday, Jesus does this dramatic thing in the temple. We are going to talk about this dramatic event today on the Covenant Weekly Podcast, Episode 14, Overturning Tables. This story of Jesus disrupting things in the temple courts is something that is recorded in each of the four Gospels. While John talks about it at the beginning of Jesus' ministry, both Matthew and Mark record it in the same place as Luke, which I just read from. The courtyards were meant as a means of approaching God, beginning with the court of the Gentiles, into which anyone could go, followed by the court of women, into which any Israelite, clean or unclean, could go. Beyond that was the court of Israel, which was reserved for Israelite men who were ritually clean. Beyond that was the altar, and then the holy place, which was inside. These were reserved for working priests. And finally, the Holy of Holies, which was accessed by one priest one time per year. Each of these spaces had meaning and significance. But for the priests, for the religious leaders and the teachers, none of it had significance outside of the offerings that were brought and the sacrifices that were made. That was the most important part. And so they wanted to make it possible for the Israelite men to access the places where they could bring their sacrifices and their offerings. The problem was that as Jewish people spread around the world, these people who would come to the temple on an annual basis didn't have access to the right kind of money that was needed at the temple. You know, they couldn't use foreign currency that had idolatrous images on it. These people also had to travel a long distance for Passover, and they couldn't bring their best animals with them. People coming to the temple needed a way to exchange the money that they brought with them for the temple money, and they needed a way to purchase acceptable sacrifices. To accommodate for this, permission was granted for the exchange of money and the selling of sacrifices in the outer court of the temple, the court of the Gentiles. And every indication is that those exchanging money and selling sacrifices had the freedom to charge healthy fees to ensure that their ventures were profitable. And this made very practical sense. If the ventures were profitable, the people who ran those businesses would go into some other kind of business, and then the opportunities for monetary exchange and the purchase of sacrifice would be gone. It made logical sense to everyone that these businessmen could set up and make a profit. It benefited the entire system that was financially assisted through fees paid by the businessmen to the temple, and then the offerings and sacrifices that were subsequently brought further into the temple. I'm not sure everyone thought it was ideal, but it was a compromise worth making because it benefited everyone. It just made sense. It made sense to everyone, or benefited everyone, except perhaps those who wanted to use that outer court for its originally intended purpose, as a place in which to approach God. How can one teach and learn and worship and pray effectively when there's bartering around the money exchange table, the bleat of sheep, the coo of caged doves, the moo of cattle? And that doesn't account for people selling their services as tour guides to the city, others hawking Passover souvenirs for families to carry back to their young children, and still others using this large and busy courtyard as a shortcut so they didn't have to go all the way around the temple walls. All of this was apparently going on in the court of the Gentiles. But really, like, who did it bother? The ones it would have bothered were the Gentiles and the people who weren't really a part of the whole system anyway, so the idea that this would interrupt them was kind of pointless to consider. But Jesus did consider it. He was appalled that a space designed to help people approach God had become a marketplace for profit, even the profit of the religious system. He was appalled that a place designed to serve the Gentiles had become a place to serve the insiders. He was appalled that a place designed as the most inclusive place in the temple, where everyone could be together in their approach to God, had actually become a place where exclusivity was highlighted by saying, you can't really come to God without the right money and the right sacrifice. They even had signs in this area, in both Greek and Latin, focused on warning those Gentiles, hey, you better not go any further. Rather than a place of inclusion, this had become a place of division. To top it off, Jesus, when he talks about them turning a house of prayer into a den of thieves, is quoting the prophet Jeremiah as he wrote in what we have as Jeremiah 7. In that context, the prophet is speaking out against the temple, becoming a place where injustice is being done against foreigners, orphans, and widows. By drawing on that text, Jesus is highlighting that this place of inclusion has also become a place of exploitation. And Jesus could not abide by it. By all accounts, he creates enough of a scene to have an impact, but not enough to disturb the peace and draw nearby Roman soldiers, who were generally quick to seize on any opportunity to beat down a disruptive local. You know, Jesus made his point and made the religious elite angry, but in a way that actually gained him favor with the people who were aware of the disparity within the system, but felt powerless to do anything about it. It begs the question, in what ways are we in danger of highlighting exclusivity rather than offering an invitation to all? Are there times and ways we risk being driven by the expediency of financial health rather than protection and care for the vulnerable? Are we allowing care for those at most risk or with significant limitations to drive our decision making? Or are we leaving them to bear the brunt of things? When Jesus overturned the tables, he disrupts the sacrificial insider system that had become the focus of the temple. This prophetic act declares that those are not the things God intended to build. Religion and a system. The conflict between what was built and what God intends shows up in what follows Jesus' actions. The religious people, the insiders, the ones who benefited from the system, get angry to the point of planning how they are going to eliminate Jesus. They will, over the coming days, conspire with government powers that they hated, opposing religious factions, and even people who love Jesus in order to spark fear and worry in their hearts that if Jesus is allowed to carry on everything everyone relies on for security and safety and financial gain, it's going to be destroyed. That's what they claim, and they work with people that they otherwise hated to accomplish their purposes. You know, it's interesting because that response is prophetic in its own right. Jesus knows that all that they are building on, it is going to crumble at some point anyway. They just don't see it. So on one hand, we have this response of fear, of kind of circling the wagons, on doubling down on exclusion, even as they conspire with those they want to exclude to achieve it. On the other hand, we read that people start coming to the temple each day to hang on Jesus' every word. This court of the Gentile becomes again a place where people can come and encounter God. And it's not just the insiders, it's everyone. Matthew's account says the blind and lame came to him in the temple and he healed them. And they even heard the children in the temple shouting, "Praise God for the Son of David." Jesus showed up and transformed it from a place of exclusion, division, and exploitation into a place of connection with God, inclusion, and healing. As a church, as a community of Jesus followers, it would be nice to presume that we will always be on God's side with our decisions. But all too often, churches and individual Christians become protectors of institutions and protectors of religion, rather than courts designed to invite all who will come to do so. We have to keep our focus on the things that God desires so that when it comes time to make our decisions, they will more likely align with God in his heart. I'm so thankful that that is the desire in the heart of our board and our congregation. May we continue to keep our eyes on Jesus and keep our hearts aligned with him so that when decisions need to be made, we can make them increasingly aligned with God's heart. May our covenant family, may we continually be a courtyard that welcomes all and in which Jesus is free to do his teaching, healing work without needing to overturn tables. I have just three things to remind you of as we move through Holy Week. First, if you haven't seen it, there is a Holy Week devotional that's been created by our Be in Christ Church of Canada family to serve us during this week. You may find it at covenantchurch.ca/news. We've put the links there in our latest news feed, or you can go directly to the source at beinchrist.ca/Easter. Secondly, we are looking forward to our Good Friday service this coming Friday at 10:30 a.m. This will be a somber and reflective service that will culminate in receiving communion together. Please join us either in person or online as we sit with Jesus at the Passover meal, kneel with Jesus in the garden, stand with Jesus at his arrest, trial, and judgment, and witness Jesus on the cross. And finally, we will be coming to Easter Sunday morning, where we will continue to reflect on the events of Holy Week. We'll be celebrating the announcement of Jesus' resurrection, his eye-opening encounter with disciples on the road to Emmaus, and then his transformative appearance and commissioning to his other disciples. That Easter service will be held at 10:30 a.m. and can be participated in both online and in person as well. After the service, there will be hot cross buns from Georgian Bakery that will be available for those who are there in person to enjoy. We really could use 4 to 6 people who could come in early on Sunday morning and help us by cutting and toasting the buns. If you'd be willing to do that, just let me know at john@covenantchurch.ca so we can make arrangements for that. If you don't have any volunteers, then we'll just have the tasty buns untoasted and unbuttered. That's fine too. Our plan is to serve those buns outside, weather permitting, and we have opportunities to have a shelter for the buns themselves. Both the gathering and the time to eat together outside on Sunday will be opportunities to celebrate the life we are all invited to participate in through Jesus. I'm really looking forward to both the somber reflective time on Friday and the celebration on Sunday. In the meantime, though, as we move through this Holy Week, may you go encouraged to know that the heart of God is to create space for all to come. When you've been excluded in the name of expediency or security or religion, that has not been the heart of God. May we all join in turning over necessary tables among us and in our own hearts to create space for Jesus to do his welcoming and healing work in our lives, in our church, and in our community. God bless. Go in peace.